Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is June 8th, 2018, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Smells Like Isopropyl Alcohol for Nausea. And our guest skeptic is Megan Groth. Megan is a pharmacist who has been practicing in emergency medicine for the past 6 years. She recently transitioned into industry, taking on a position as a medical science liaison in New England. She's been a contributor for Academic Life in Emergency Medicine and Emergency Medicine PharmD blogs, and is a member of the AliumU capsule team. Welcome back to the SGM, Megan.
Hey, Ken. Thanks for having me on. You know, I wanted to follow up on our last episode where it seemed like we had some hooked on phonics with Ken and Megan going. Check and see if you've been able to pronounce mineralocorticoid.
Oh, you want me to give it another shot here? Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Mineralocorticoid. How is that?
We can keep trying.
Well, I have learned to say trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole without stumbling. So
that's pretty good.
I am making progress, but I want to know, what's it like being out of the ED and part of big pharma?
Yeah, you know, it's definitely different. I think it was time for me to make a change out of emergency medicine. There's a number of different reasons for it, but it's pretty great, actually. During my training, I've been able to get to work from home, which is something I didn't think I'd ever be able to do as a pharmacist. So it's been pretty good so far. My dog loves it.
Well, let's get this show started with a case.
All right. So we have a 32-year-old woman who presents to your emergency department with complaints of nausea. Her nausea score is about a 5 on a scale of 0 to 10. And she states that she's worried about coming down with some sort of stomach flu. She's hemodynamically stable and looks a bit queasy, but she isn't actively retching when you see her.
Nausea and vomiting are frequent complaints of patients presenting to the emergency department, accounting for just under 5 million visits per year.
There's a number of prescription medications that are available to treat these symptoms. They include ondansetron, droperidol, metoclopramide, promethazine, and prochlorperazine. That's a handful, Ken. I'm glad that I'm saying those drug names and not you. The most commonly utilized antiemetic in United States emergency departments is ondansetron, which is a 5-HT3 antagonist.
You think that that was just sort of random that you got that paragraph with all of those drug names? Megan, we need to work more together, obviously. Well, despite its widespread use, a dose of intravenous ondansetron takes about 30 minutes to take effect, which has led to an interest in a more rapidly acting intervention for actively nauseous patients on the verge of vomiting.
Ken, there's a new Cochrane review by Hines and colleagues that was published in 2018 looking at aromatherapy for postoperative nausea and vomiting. They concluded that aromatherapy may have similar effectiveness to placebo based on low-quality evidence.
There is some data supporting the use of an inhalation of isopropyl alcohol in emergency department patients, and we covered that paper on the SGEM in episode number 144.
Ken, the SGEM bottom line from that critical review was that for patients presenting to the ED with complaints of nausea and vomiting, a nasal inhalation of isopropyl alcohol is a quick, inexpensive way that may transiently improve symptoms without evidence of harm.
So what's the question for this week's episode?
Okay, so the question is, does nasally inhaled isopropyl alcohol reduce nausea in adult emergency department patients with or without oral ondansetron?
And the reference, Megan?
This paper was written by April and colleagues. It's titled Aromatherapy versus Oral Ondansetron for Antiemetic Therapy Among Adult Emergency Department Patients, a Randomized Controlled Trial. It was published in the Annals of Emergency Medicine earlier this year.
All right, let's run through the PICO. What was the population?
So they were evaluating patients greater than 17 years of age presenting to the emergency department with a chief complaint of nausea, with self-reported nausea severity of 3 or greater on a numeric response scale ranging from 0 to 10.
And there were a number of exclusion criteria. Notably, they excluded patients who had already had an intravenous catheter placed or who had received antiemetic therapy prior to enrollment. One other exclusion was the treating provider based on their discretion, could exclude the patient. We'll put the rest of the exclusions into the show notes. All right, let's talk about the interventions. They had three arms in this study.
Okay, so Ken, this gets a little bit confusing, so we'll try to be clear in the discussion part. So there were three groups in this study. Group one was an inhalation of isopropyl alcohol and 4 milligrams of oral ondansetron. Group two was an inhalation of isopropyl alcohol and an oral placebo. And group three was an inhalation of a saline placebo along with 4 milligrams of oral ondansetron.
And what did they compare it to?
So the investigators decided that there should be no dual placebo arm due to concerns that would discourage patient participation.
All right, so you didn't have inhaled saline and an oral placebo group in this one. Let's go through the outcomes, though. What was the primary outcome?
Their primary outcome was the change in nausea from baseline to 30 minutes post-intervention as measured on a 0 to 100 millimeter visual analog scale.
And the secondary outcomes?
The secondary outcomes included a change in pain visual analog score 30 minutes post-intervention, nausea scores until ED disposition, pain score at ED disposition, and satisfaction visual analog scores.
So the author's conclusions were, quote, among ED patients with acute nausea and not requiring immediate intravenous access, aromatherapy with or without oral ondansetron provides greater nausea relief than oral ondansetron alone. Let's go through the quality checklist for randomized clinical trials. Question number one, the study population, did it include or focused on those in the emergency department?
Yes.
Did they adequately randomize them?
Yep.
Did they conceal the randomization?
Yes.
Did they analyze the patients in the groups to which they were randomized?
Yes.
Did they recruit the patients consecutively?
No. So, Ken, the enrollment was dependent upon nursing staff identifying a convenient sample of potential study subjects or at the treating provider discretion.
The patients in both groups, were they similar with respect to prognostic factors?
I am unsure about this one. So it appeared that there may have been a trend toward fewer women in the inhaled isopropyl alcohol and oral placebo group compared to the two other arms. It also appeared that there may have been a trend toward longer duration of nausea at enrollment for the isopropyl alcohol and oral placebo arm compared to the other groups.
Were all participants unaware of their group allocation?
I am also unsure about this one. Investigators undertook blinding measures, but it's likely that patients would have been able to tell if they were inhaling isopropyl alcohol or a saline placebo. Blinding effectiveness is detailed in Table 4 of the paper, and 60% of subjects in the inhaled isopropyl alcohol / oral ondansetron group were able to correctly identify that they were actually receiving isopropyl alcohol. So they tried to blind, but it seemed like the blinding effectiveness certainly wasn't 100% here.
All right, question number 8. All groups, were they treated equally except for the intervention?
I'm unsure. Quote unquote, standard of care was allowed for treatments other than the intervention, but this wasn't described in detail.
Was their follow-up complete?
Definitely. So 120 subjects of 122 randomized completed the study.
Do you think they considered all patient-important outcomes?
Yes.
And do you think the treatment effect was large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
I'm unsure about this one, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more in the discussion section regarding pairwise comparisons.
All right, let's go through the key results. They did have 122 patients who were enrolled and subsequently randomized, and 120 were included in the modified intention to treat population, resulting in a 98% follow-up rate.
Patient characteristics were pretty similar at baseline, except that women represented 35% of the inhaled isopropyl alcohol plus oral placebo group, compared to 50% of women in the other two groups.
The predominant cause of nausea was infectious gastroenteritis, 55%, and the nausea score at baseline was just over 50 on that 0 to 100 millimeter visual analog scale. So they found that inhaled isopropyl alcohol alone or in combination with oral ondansetron was superior to oral ondansetron alone. But let's drill down into the primary outcome, and that was the mean VAS nausea scale reduction at 30 minutes post-treatment What were those results?
Okay, so for group one, this is inhaled isopropyl alcohol plus oral ondansetron. They found a 30 millimeter reduction from baseline at 30 minutes. Group two, that's inhaled isopropyl alcohol and oral placebo, had a reduction of 32 millimeters. And group three, that's the inhaled placebo and oral ondansetron group, had a reduction of 9 millimeters from baseline at 30 minutes.
All right, how about the secondary outcomes?
Both groups receiving inhaled isopropyl alcohol experienced lower nausea visual analog scores throughout their ED stay than the inhaled placebo and oral ondansetron group. These subjects also had lower nausea visual analog scores at ED disposition and improved satisfaction scores when they compared them with the inhaled placebo and oral ondansetron group.
And one other thing is, both inhaled isopropyl alcohol groups required less rescue antiemetic therapy. But Megan, let's talk nerdy. And we've got 5 points, as usual, and you've got the first one.
All right, Ken, the first topic we have to talk about is blinding. The authors acknowledged their challenges with blinding the inhalational intervention in this study. They covered up the labels on the saline or the isopropyl alcohol swabs. They kept the swabs at arm's length from study investigators, and they asked patients to not reveal what they were sniffing. Even with that, more than half of the subjects, 60% in the study, correctly identified the inhaled product as either placebo or isopropyl alcohol when they were asked about it afterward. Given that the primary endpoint of the study was also a subjective measure, that being the nausea score on a visual analog score, this may have been affected by this obstacle. Also, the pain visual analog score suggests an unblinding of the subjects. Those in group three inhaling the placebo got much less reduction in their mean pain score. Since treatment was left up to the attending physician, could patients in the placebo inhalation group have received more opioids for their pain, leading to more nausea and vomiting?
Point number two is about the standard of care. Study investigators noted that subjects could receive standard of care after enrollment in the trial. This could have included intravenous catheter placement after enrollment and/or rescue antiemetics and analgesics. In the results section, they described the proportion of patients who received rescue antiemetics, but they didn't describe those patients who had an IV placed and, more importantly, those that received rescue analgesics. To me, it seems like if pain scores were going to be described as an endpoint, then receipt of analgesics would have been an important thing to detail, especially if the analgesic was an opioid that could produce nausea and vomiting.
So Ken, the third point regards pairwise comparisons, and this gets a little confusing, so stay with me here. The investigators compared group one versus group two and group two versus group three, but not group one versus group three. The comparison of group one versus group two is really just comparing the addition of oral ondansetron, where the comparison of group two with group three evaluates the effect of inhaled isopropyl alcohol versus oral ondansetron. In this case, both variables are flipped. I really would have liked to have seen a comparison of group one, that's isopropyl alcohol with oral ondansetron, and group three, that's inhaled placebo and oral ondansetron. That would have evaluated the effect of adding isopropyl alcohol against a background of oral ondansetron, as this might be routinely expected in practice. The mean visual analog score reduction at 30 minutes for group one was 30 millimeters, and for group three was 9 millimeters. But the standard deviations are pretty large, and I'm not that great at calculating p-values off the top of my head. I would have found it valuable for the authors to have provided this statistical comparison as well.
Ooh, you're getting really nerdy on us. Whew. All right, Megan. Number four, not consecutive enrollment. Patients were recruited as a convenient sample, and nurses identified potential candidates. They also did not recruit 24/7, although study personnel were made available during a range of times to capture patients from evening and nighttime hours and over the weekend. Patients could also be excluded at the treating provider's discretion, and this introduces the possibility of selection bias.
Ken, the last point is a straw man comparison. The primary study endpoint was the nausea score reduction at 30 minutes post-intervention. Under the best of circumstances, intravenous ondansetron has an onset of effect of 30 minutes. And for oral ondansetron, we know that the peak plasma concentration doesn't happen until 90 minutes. So if we're attempting to measure the effect of inhaled isopropyl alcohol with or without oral ondansetron, I'm not sure that 30 minutes is the most appropriate time point to do this. I'm concerned that it may have been too soon after the intervention for oral ondansetron to have taken effect. I think you can see this in the article with the inhalational placebo and oral ondansetron group, where the effect on visual analog scores of nausea was definitely more pronounced at 60 minutes than at 30 minutes. It depends on what you're trying to demonstrate. If you want to show that inhalational isopropyl alcohol works more quickly than oral ondansetron, then sure, the 30-minute mark has some value. But if you're trying to test the overall efficacy of this intervention, 60 minutes or even 90 minutes may have been more appropriate.
Well, that's it for our 5 nerdy points. It's time to compare the author's conclusions to the SGEM's conclusions.
Okay, so Ken, this study adds to the previous research done by Beadle and colleagues that we talked about in the SGEM episode number 144, where we concluded that an inhalation of isopropyl alcohol could be considered for transient symptomatic relief of nausea in ED patients. But the present study probably excluded those with more severe nausea and vomiting because they excluded those patients with IV catheters in place prior to enrollment. That being said, it does appear that an inhalation of isopropyl alcohol with or without oral ondansetron was effective in reducing nausea scores. We're concerned that this might be due to a placebo effect and are disappointed that they didn't report any safety data.
Well, can you give us a bottom line then?
In moderately nauseated adult patients presenting to the ED who do not need immediate IV access, an inhalation of isopropyl alcohol monotherapy may be a reasonable option. However, it could just be a placebo effect.
And how about a case resolution?
So Ken, you have to step out of the patient's room to tend to a critically ill patient. You let her know that you'll be back as soon as you can to examine her and get the appropriate tests underway. But in the meantime, you'd like her to take some deep inhalations of an isopropyl alcohol swab while she waits.
And how are you going to take this new study and apply it clinically?
Well, I'm not going to apply it clinically anymore, Ken, because I'm not in the ED.
That is true. We'll need to modify. We need to make these notes in real time now with your changing life.
So this evaluation adds to the available literature on inhaled isopropyl alcohol as symptomatic relief for patients in the ED experiencing mild to moderate nausea and vomiting. It's an inexpensive and potentially effective intervention when used on its own or added to ondansetron. We still can't rule out the placebo effect until a better placebo can be investigated. Perhaps making both smell like peppermint to mask the isopropyl alcohol smell, or making the placebo smell like something that's known to induce nausea, and you could see if that too reduces nausea in the test subjects.
Oh, that would be a tricky study, all that smells going on. All right, well, what are you going to tell the patient? And I know it's not your patient because you're not in the emergency department any longer. See how quickly I came up to speed on that?
So it looks like you're feeling pretty nauseous at the moment. I'd like to spend a little more time finding out about what brings you here. However, I need to go check on another patient. For the moment, please take a few deep inhalations of this alcohol swab. There have been some studies that show this could ease some of your nausea and vomiting while you wait. We'll also get some lab tests done. When I get back, we can see if you need something else for the nausea.
It's time to announce the Keener Contest winner, and it was David Lemonick. He's from Pittsburgh, and he knew Vince Woolfolk was the NFL player recently on the HBO show Hard Knocks, talking about using acupuncture for the treatment of muscle pain after workouts. David has won multiple times now, and he will be receiving a super-duper cool prize from a group that helped inspire The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Megan, what's the question this week?
So we saw multiple pairwise comparisons in this study, which got a little bit confusing. When making multiple statistical comparisons, as the authors did in this study, what type of statistical error are the evaluators trying to control for?
Ooh, if you know the answer to this nerdy stat question, then send me an email to thesjam@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line, and the first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. Now, I'm going to include some other FOMED on this issue, but I want to thank you, Megan, for doing another SJAM episode with me.
You're welcome, Ken. And even though I'm outside the ED right now, I'm happy to come back on the show anytime.
Well, you know I love ED pharmacists, but you know what? I really like you, even if you're not in the ED. So you're welcome back anytime to give your expertise as a pharmacist to help us understand the literature even better.
Okay, no problem.
But you are going to have to give us the tagline, and I really want you to put on the accent thick.
What kind of accent? I don't even know.
Oh, of course you don't have an accent.
No, I have an accent. I definitely have an accent. But so I've been living in Massachusetts for a little over a year, and I have resisted so fiercely the Massachusetts accent that I can't do it on command.
Oh, how about just your own accent?
Okay. I'll see if I can get very nasally. So remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
I didn't hear an accent. It just sounded the same to me. Thanks, Megan.
Okay.